Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a
creepy way. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2019 film The Lighthouse, directed by Robert Eggers. He also directed The Witch, spelled The Vivitch. And he wrote the thing, too, with his brother Max. So, brother Jay, this is technically your pick.
Yes.
You gave me a list of choices, and I, as I told Drew, Jason doesn't know what these movies are, does he? Because two of them were standard kind of, and I thought... Yeah, I'm not really into it. It doesn't sound great. I still looked at this one. I'm like, oh, I've heard the stuff about this one. I think this one would be really fun to watch. Jason doesn't know what he's getting into.
Yeah. What was the other movie that I picked?
You picked a... Well, okay. I think you picked a old guy's go to pick up young soldier's body and take him home from
Iraq. No. I mean the last movie that... I mean the one that Drew and I picked that Drew was like, Yeah...
Well, okay, you picked the Ghosts of Mars or Last Man on Mars or Something to Mars.
Yeah, but that wasn't, I think it was more recent than that.
Okay, I'll have to, no, Dougie, I'll just, Dougie, you know.
Happy birthday, Dougie, by the way.
Yes, happy birthday, Dougie. I didn't realize our birthdays were so close. So, The Lighthouse. You had heard nothing about this?
I knew nothing about this.
Cool. So what is your first reaction to The Lighthouse? You saw this yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Okay, do tell. It's going to drive you crazy unless you find that movie, doesn't it?
So I picked this movie because it had William Dafoe in it, and I like William Dafoe. And the little blurb that I saw made it look kind of Lynchian, and it looked like the crazy kind of suspense movie that I like. And so I watched it last night and
did Jesse watch it with you?
He did.
Excellent.
And, this is a batshit crazy movie. I actually thought this was a lot like, is it Ingmar Bergman's The Seventh Seal?
Yes. Yep.
That's what I got that vibe from this movie.
Also, some of the Lars von Trier movies.
So, first of all, well acted.
Oh,
both of them were amazing.
I thought it was well acted. I thought this was a good movie. It wasn't entirely enjoyable, but it was probably the most beautiful movie I've seen at least in 2021.
It was black and white. It was so well done.
It was lit for black and white. It was beautiful. It was crisp. It was sparse, but in a great way. The sound design was excellent.
Yeah. It was a period piece.
Yes.
No, I appreciate. I mean, it was Asmus. It was atmospherically a very well-crafted story and movie.
Kind of a pun with the atmosphere being a major character. The weather is important in this movie.
Well, the environment is its own character.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of things that I didn't understand. I also said at one point, I wrote down in my notes, holy fuck, this is Eraserhead.
No.
It has that crazy shit David Lynch vibe to it.
Yeah, but I think Eraserhead is trying to do a thing. It's being crazy for crazy's sake. And this movie, I think, had a plan and it stuck to it.
Well, you know, there's another movie called The Lighthouse. Actually, loosely based on the historic
thing. Yeah. Yeah, and this is, I mean, it's very sort of similar, if I understand. I didn't watch it, but I understand.
I watched parts of it last night.
I imagine it's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing. It has some very similar elements.
Yeah, well, I mean, being like two guys at a lighthouse, you know, it's a relationship movie.
Yeah.
It's two people. I mean, I think you said what it's crazy and what was the other word you used? I can't remember, but it was beautiful because this is a movie about craziness, and it is just, yeah, it is wild. But let's
my problem with it was I kept trying to figure out what the catch was, what the gimmick was, what really drove him crazy. So I never could discern what the turning point was, because it didn't seem to be the isolation.
Well, I think they were both a little crazy to begin with. As we find out later, they both have kind of a past, but it's a relationship movie. They drive each other crazy. Well, Willem Dafoe drives Robert Pattinson crazy. Who are we kidding?
Yeah. But again, well acted. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Amazing. I was impressed. I was impressed with both of them, but Willem Dafoe did an amazing performance.
Oh, yeah. But it's funny because he is an actor that, even though he's a weirdo and he takes weirdo roles, he's just so I mean, I always know that he's going to make a movie better. But, you know, Robert Pattinson, who it turns out I'm very impressed with anyway. I mean, you know, post Twilight, when he was basically a kid actor, he's done some great stuff. He was great in this.
Yeah, I didn't see either of them. I saw the characters.
Oh, exactly.
I believed.
Which is good, because they are the only characters in this entire movie.
And it's a long movie.
It's, yeah, yeah. Shall we dive in?
Yeah.
But at every turn, I'm like, where is this headed? Like, what are we getting to?
That's exactly. Well, because it had so many tonal shifts that I couldn't tell. Were they flashbacks? Were they flash forwards? Were they complete hallucinations? You know, was he dead all along?
Oh, yeah. The thing is that is there magic in this universe? Is there is this going to turn into like a buddy film where they conquer the elements at the end? Well, are they going to squabble amongst themselves and then have to face a foe together? Spoiler, no.
Well, I think at one point Thomas tells Ephraim. I think I have those names right.
No, you have it right. Thomas is Willem Dafoe and Ephraim is Robert Pattinson.
So Thomas tells Ephraim, well, Ephraim's actually just dead in a field of trees.
Yeah.
He has that whole monologue about how they're not even really there.
Willem Dafoe has a lot of monologues. It's great. His character is like an old salt, like old sailor who likes to tell stories and has very colorful language.
Of course. Because also they're drinking kerosene.
Oh, yeah. No, they're. Okay, let's dive right in. And this synopsis is going to refer to Ephraim as Winslow, because his last name is Winslow, Robert Pattinson. So Winslow is Robert Pattinson, and Wake is Willem Dafoe, Thomas Wake. So it's the late 1800s, and retired timberman Ephraim Winslow, Robert Pattinson, is sent on a boat to serve a contract job as a wiki, someone who works in a lighthouse, for 4 weeks on an isolated island with a described in the synopsis as with a gassy elderly man named Thomas Wake, Willem Dafoe. On the first day of the job, Winslow notices that there is a hole in his cot. As he digs into it, he finds a small wooden figurine of a mermaid and stuffs it in his jacket. Now, is it wooden or is it ivory? Is it some sort of scrimshaw thing? Who knows? And he puts it in his pocket because, you know, you never know what you get. Turns out the hole in the mattress and the mermaid become important later for sexual release. He is perceived by Winslow as strange and superstitious. Wake is, Willem Dafoe. He goes up to the top of the lighthouse at night and strips nude. Also, he doesn't let Winslow go up to the lighthouse itself, into the light area. He's the master
into the lamp room.
The lamp room, yeah, exactly. Yep. And Winslow decides to shrug it off. But he's drawn towards the ocean. He sees floating tree stumps in the water along with the horrifying image of a mermaid in the deep. Then he wakes, revealing this to be a dream.
Or we think.
Yeah. Well,
the mermaid has a banshee scream.
Yeah. Yeah. So over the course of his stay, Winslow is allocated the shit jobs. Literally. He has to refuel the light. And we see him hauling this gigantic container of gasoline all the way up all of the stairs. And at the end of which, Willem Dafoe smacks him upside the head and said, "Dude, use this little container and take that big container back down. You want to explode this whole thing?" So, yeah, just one kerosene. Example. Yeah. It's just this one example of how Robert Pattinson's character is doing this backbreaking labor with no help from the old guy who
has no guidance really either.
No. So, and he's not very like, if Willem Dafoe is trying to the first night they sit down for dinner, he offers, Winslow some alcohol and Winslow's like, "Yeah, we're not allowed to have alcohol." And, Wake is like, "I'm pouring you some alcohol and you're going to drink it," I'm guessing that he's going to loosen them up so they can have a nice little chit chat and they become friends. But, Winslow is not really that talkative or interested in telling things about his own life. He's just going to do his job and keep to himself, which when there's only two people there is kind of seems like it would be disappointing for Wake for sure. He's not going to have a buddy. So instead, he basically just gives him all the shit jobs, and he's got like the cistern is full of like dead birds and stuff, and muck that he has to muck out because they can't even have clean water to drink.
Because it was open.
Yeah. He's got to haul all this stuff, you know, with a shitty ass wheelbarrow. Sometimes in the rain. He's got to lift stuff up all the stairs by himself. And, oh, by the way, Robert Pattinson had to work out for this movie. He is ripped. Willem Dafoe probably worked out for this movie, too. But he's got to do everything, including, like, disposing of the chamber pots. So, as the weeks progress, Winslow is more and more curious about Wake's obsession with the light. And he's also being pestered during his shit jobs. He's being basically mocked by a seagull, which is really funny and a little menacing at the same time.
And also a little Hitchcockian.
Oh, totally. Yeah. So the weeks continue and Winslow constantly retreats to the supply cabin to masturbate to the figurine of the mermaid. And like clockwork, he sees Wake on the top level of the lighthouse, bare naked. One night at dinner, the two decide to get to know each other. They finally introduce each other by name and discuss the previous wiki. Wake said that his previous keeper passed away shortly after losing his sanity. Winslow tells Wake how he used to work up in the north but decided to change professions. Wake asks if he's running away from something he did on the mainland, and Winslow just shrugs it off. And then Winslow asks Wake why killing a seagull was a bad omen because, earlier, Wake noticed that Winslow was being tormented by this bird. and saw him lash out at the bird. And he yelled at him and said, "You are not to mess with the birds, because the birds are the souls of the dead sailors." So, anyway. So the day before Winslow is slated to leave, he notices a major jam in the oil barrack and goes to see what the fuss is about. He opens the chamber to see a dying seagull stuck inside. The other seagull, who's been tormenting him, flies down to the barrack and attacks him. And so Winslow grabs the seagull and violently kills this bird.
Almost cartoonish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And because I know that in 2020, no real birds were hurt in this filming of this. It's strictly like this guy just, he, as Connie might say, flipped his chicken. He just destroys the seagull.
It was... I actually, because I like you, I was like, well, that's not a real bird. I actually laughed.
Yeah, no, me too.
It was just so absurd.
And so violent. He is done. He is snapped. But
I absolutely understood how he felt, though. We've all been there. Well, maybe just me. Maybe when I was...
Oh, no.
I'm assuming anybody who has had children feels like that every now and then, but... Having a dog that sometimes is very just willful, I understand that kind of temperous rage.
Remind me, I'll tell you a story of flipping my own chicken this week at the end of this whole thing. I'm not the hero. So, Winslow just beats the crap out of this seagull dead. And that afternoon, the weather's been shitty, but that afternoon, the wind stops and Wake is, pretty paranoid that a storm is going to come, and he decides that they should drown their sorrows before the ferry comes to pick them up the next day. So they board up the windows, and this storm begins. And as the night progresses, they get drunker and drunker, and Winslow asks to go to the top level of the lighthouse into the lamp room, and Wake is like, nope. And the next morning, the ferry is nowhere to be seen. And Winslow decides to continue his morning routine, but he's cut short by a mysterious figure washing up on the shore. Winslow approaches the body, which appears to be a naked woman, until he looks down and realizes that she is actually a mermaid. A mermaid with a very pronounced vagina.
Yeah. Jesse and I both had exclamations at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, we're never going to get that out of our heads.
Well, if you're going to have a metaphor, make it a big old juicy fluffy metaphor.
There was really no subtlety.
He runs down to the cottage to find Wake, stating that the rations were impacted by the storm, and he informs him that they buried a secret stash of rations. That's hard to say. A secret stash of rations next to the lighthouse that they will need to get. They dig up this big crate, and it's revealed to only have more alcohol in it, which Winslow was not very happy about.
Because that's they got some silverware.
Oh, that's true.
But they make the point that they're not sure if the ship didn't come or if they just slept through it.
Oh, exactly. And because the weather was bad, they're assuming that the ship didn't come because of the weather. But yeah, they don't know for sure. And they get... as the nights progress, they get more drunk and more violent toward one another. So one night in the bedroom, Winslow, in a drunken stupor, harasses Wake and criticizes his cooking skills, leading Wake to verbally curse him out, asking Neptune to strike him dead in a very long soliloquy. It's pretty great. I loved it.
It was impressive.
Yes. So the days of the storm continue, and Winslow slowly begins to drink on his own, and he loses his composure and his concept of time. And Wake has already told him that, yeah, they've been stuck before because of weather. Like, they've been stuck for weeks and months before.
I think he said 7 months at one point.
Exactly. By the way, this is you know, their 4-week contract and theoretically just a couple of days and they are losing their shit, or at least Winslow is losing his shit. So 7 more months seems like a maddening. So again, we lose track of time too. We don't know how many days they've been stuck there because it's all the sort of same routine and they are they're drunk and fighting with each other, or they are like Winslow's doing chores and Wake has kind of disappeared in the light room, the lab room. And so let's see. So Winslow begins drinking on his own, blah, blah, blah. He sneaks up to the top level of the lighthouse, but can't enter without a key. And then as he gazes into the light, he begins to have visions of tentacles moving inside. Wake begins to psychologically manipulate Winslow until he reveals that his name is actually not Ephraim. He actually murdered a timberman by that name and assumed his identity. Wake accused Winslow of spilling his beans, and later Winslow drunkenly breaks the mermaid figure in half. So that's the thing, is Wake kind of pesters him to give up his secrets, but once he gives up his secrets, it's like, oh no, don't tell me your secrets. This is not good. I don't want to know those kind of secrets. Winslow has another vision of pulling up a lobster cage from the depths containing the severed head of Wake's previous wiki. And eventually Winslow can't take it anymore and tries to kill Wake in his sleep and steal the key. This becomes unsuccessful and Winslow tries to leave. He pushes the lifeboat out of the cabin, but Wake sees this and uses an axe to destroy the boat. Wake chases Winslow into the cottage, but inside, Wake continues with more physical manipulation, continues with more psychological manipulation, complaining that it was actually Winslow that chased Wake around the island with the axe. An undisclosed amount of time later, the two have another drunken party until the storm becomes so powerful the waves crash through the windows and destroy the cottage. The next morning, the two wake in a flooded cottage, and Winslow decides to pick up Wake's diary. Inside, it turns out Wake was not really Winslow's friend. His diary contains things like, he should be fired without pay. All he does is masturbate and complain. The work he does is not up to par. So at this point, Winslow's like, oh no, you fucking didn't, old man. So now it's really on. And let's see. Yeah, so Wake finally reveals that he knows Winslow killed the seagull and brought bad omens on the island. And Winslow attacks Wake and starts envisioning him as different people. First as the real Ephraim Winslow, and then as the mermaid, and then as Poseidon himself. Can you imagine being on set the day they made Willem Dafoe into the Poseidon costume?
Oh.
Somebody had to glue little shells onto Willem Dafoe's torso and face.
It was a little disturbing.
Oh, it was very disturbing.
You're right. It was a lot disturbing. A lot of this movie was a lot disturbing.
So then he actually ends up beating Wake into submission, ties a collar around Wake's neck, and forces him to walk and act like a dog.
This is so bizarre. That's why I said this movie has some very Lynchian kind of tones.
Oh, we're gonna get into it in just a second. But yeah, so he walks him around like a dog. He takes over to Wake over to the hole that they took the crate of alcohol with, and covers him up with dirt until he passes out. And then Winslow uses this opportunity to steal the key and runs up to into the cottage to find the cabinet. Wake, then in a fit of rage, bursts into the cottage with the axe and hacks Winslow in the shoulder. Winslow overpowers Wake and impales Wake in the head. Winslow then walks up to the top of the lighthouse and finally sees what's inside the light. He's then overpowered by the brightness and begins to laugh maniacally until he slips and falls down the stairs all the way to the floor. The film ends with a final shot of Winslow lying naked on the rocks, seagulls pecking out his insides. Fade to white, I think. And then black. So, were you left with the same, what did I just watch feeling at the end of this movie?
I had the similar kind of vibe after watching Eraserhead 7 times. Like, I have no idea what I just experienced. It was something. I don't know what the something was, but it was something. Also, the sound and the score, the music, and just the whole atmosphere was so well done, but it was also creepy and haunting.
And the dialogue was sparse, but it was good.
It was intense. It drew you in.
Yeah.
It was very purposeful.
Yeah. And
but deliberate.
Yeah. And okay, so let's get into a little bit of film criticism here. We owe this to one Michaela Barton of Flip Screened. I'm going to do some quotes from Michaela Barton. "This film is so clearly gay that the analysis of its homoerotic subtext would be like arguing the sky is blue. Wake frequently compliments Winslow's physical appearance, calling him pretty as a picture and describing his eyes as bright as the lady. Barton interprets Howard's name change to his previous deceased boss as an indicative of a more intimate relationship. Considering the act of Tommy taking his name, because yeah, later Winslow says, my name's not Ephraim, it's really Tommy, which is also Thomas Wake's name. So it's like, it's suggesting a tender and affectionate attitude, almost like the tradition of taking your partner's name after a marriage. When asked about the scene in which Winslow criticizes Wake's cooking, Barton says that Wake's desperate need for validation of his lobster is a euphemism for his penis.
What?
It's like, and your cooking sucks. You loved my lobster. Don't tell me you didn't love my lobster.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. This movie a bit.
Lots of masturbation. We got the giant vagina. It says, the fact that he runs screaming from the mermaid means that the mermaid was never Tommy's siren. Instead, real siren was a little later. And then Willem Dafoe, actually, when asked about this, says that, oh, yeah, the homoeroticism is blatant. He just used it to explore what it means to be a man. Like, they're pushing each other's buttons out of fear and out of threat of who they are. They're both guilty. They both have a sense of guilt of wrong. There's no moral judgment in the story. You just watch these two guys struggling to find a way to survive themselves.
And each other.
Yeah, it's got existential roots and identity things and things of masculinity and domination and submission. He says, for better and worse, you know, when you see the flip-flop, it's pretty cool. After beating Wake into submission, Howard assumes a dominant role, calling Wake a dog and dragging him on a leash. And commenting on this scene, Robert Pattinson said, actually, yeah, there's definitely a take where we were literally trying to pull each other's pants down. It almost looked like foreplay.
Wow.
So... yeah. So this is maybe the gayest movie I've watched this year. And I watched a lovely... By the way, let me talk to you guys. Let me talk to the listeners about how... So I watched Old Guard the same week you guys did, even though I wasn't part of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to watch it too. So I watched it. You know, I thought, okay, cool. I don't want them to spoil it for me. I'll watch it myself and then I'll... And I'm like, the cool thing about the Old Guard... what you and Drew never actually talked about was one of the prominent points in the Old Guard was this beautiful love story between the two men that lasted hundreds of years. Like, it was important to the plot.
We talked about it a little, but it was...
A little, yeah. But it was actually pretty revolutionary in modern filmmaking, I think. In, like, an action movie, for sure. But this movie was three times as gay as that.
That's... Yes. And both movies I picked without any knowledge, so yes, what's wrong with me?
So there you go. Yeah. Anyway.
No, it was strange. Also, let's see. Let's look at my notes here.
Yeah, and by the way, obviously, there's no romantic relationship between
Robert Pattinson
character and Willem Dafoe's character. No. There was tension and stuff, but this is not a love story.
No. In the beginning of the movie, Ephraim Winslow, right?
Ephraim Winslow later Thomas Howard.
Winslow throws the booze out to get water, and he toasts with water. Toasting with water is bad luck.
Yeah, well.
So, that was the thing.
It wasn't quite as much bad luck as beating the shit out of a seagull. Haven't you been told not to?
Yeah. The drunken shanties were, they went on way too long.
Shanties were a thing.
Yeah, but that was still way too much.
Yeah,
that
I agree.
That was just, yeah. And then they're drinking the lamp oil, the kerosene.
Oh, yeah.
They were trying to mix it with things, like mix in honey, and like, you know, made him sick, but they were like, oh, no, it's fine. So I at the beginning was trying to figure out, well, okay, so he shows up at the lighthouse and he drank a bunch of the water, and it, you know, the water could have been terrible. So maybe this is all his terrible hallucination from something in the water.
Oh, maybe he's got the beaver fever.
Yeah, so, I don't know. This movie is I don't want to say it's a thinker of a movie, but also I'm still trying to figure it out. So I guess it is.
Oh, it's bizarre.
Yeah.
And I didn't even mention that, yeah, this is a movie about the two men with maybe some homoerotic overtones living in a house that looks like a penis on a big rock that spews light forth. Anyway.
And makes loud noises.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes. The
foghorn.
The foghorn and the mechanical part of the lighthouse. Yes. Was great. That background noise, it added to the things that would drive you crazy.
Oh, yeah. It was tension-inducing, and then I also thought, like, wow, that would drive me crazy.
Yeah. Also, you know, you get the sense that nothing in the lighthouse, like, none of the structures are completely level ever. Like, they all have some sort of tilt to them, you know?
Yeah,
maybe as part of the design, or just as they're old, you know, or built on rocks that aren't flat, right? But it seems like nothing is completely level, so they're always slightly askew, which would be a little disconcerting.
Inherently unstable.
Yeah.
Not unlike the people occupying them.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 If you were constantly just slightly off. Well, shoot, there have been times in our lives where we've all been feeling slightly off, and yeah. Sometimes medication is the answer. Sometimes self-medicating by drinking kerosene is not a good answer, so, you know.
Yeah, that's probably not the best choice. Yeah.
Anyway.
Wormwood.
So, more thoughts on the lighthouse?
No, my only other note was, like, this is some Eraserhead bullshit, so. It was good. I'm confused and do not understand. It was good. I don't know that I'm ever going to watch it again.
No, I probably won't watch it again either. I think
it's worth the watch if you like these kinds of movies. I don't think this is a mom and dad movie.
Yeah, I don't know. It might be, although maybe not in the middle of winter. Yeah, no, you know what? I am very glad I watched the movie. I haven't... my first reaction to art movie bullshit is to call it bullshit.
Yeah.
Like art, being weird for the sake of being weird, I think is mostly a waste of my time. But I thought this was pulled off really well.
Yeah, I don't think this was overdone or some auteur kind of crap.
It didn't bore me. Like, the Vivitch bored me. I did not care.
I think if there were lesser actors, this would have been harder to watch. But most the performance definitely. and the set and the effects all worked well together.
The way it was shot.
Yeah.
Like this is great. A movie that confused me but never bored me.
Right. Me too. And I think it really benefited from being black and white.
Oh, yeah. Just the starkness of it.
It very much, because it made the movie dark.
Yeah.
Which just adds to the insanity inducement.
And it also just highlighted that there was nothing in this movie except the two of them, like, and the rocks. Everything was very black and white.
Well, the birds.
Yeah, the birds, but the birds were black and white too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there is no color in this world, even if they had shot it in full color. Anyway, so, yeah. So, what's your judgment?
Well, it's hard. This is probably an A movie, but I say that, and I don't think it's an A movie for everybody, though. So, I think it's really good. I think it's worth a watch, but you have to go into it knowing that you have to like this type of movie, because this is a very specific type of movie.
Yeah, this is kind of, this is an art movie, like it's like an Oscar bait movie.
Yeah.
It's not a popcorn movie. It's more of a, look at what we did here.
It's something that a bunch of snotty people at a monthly movie club meeting would discuss.
Yes. Or a bunch of middle-aged white guys who have a podcast.
Well, I was a little too on the nose, but
yeah, who am I kidding? I'm not going to make 104. anyway. Yeah. So yeah. So I thought it was worth it. I thought it was cool.
Yeah. I think, like I said, I don't know that I'll ever watch it again. It was spooky and scary and confusing, and I was unable to see where it was going at pretty much every point in time. So I appreciate movies that can do that.
Yeah, me too. Without pissing me off, because it also didn't piss me off.
Yeah, none of it was stupid condescension or crazy dumb sleight of hand or things that were telegraphed. This movie had so much subtlety and nuance that you didn't, because I think if you go back and rewatch it, you can see pieces as they build.
Yeah.
But watching it,
but it's kind
as
of
I a, did.
Yeah, it's kind of a character study too. It's not plot driven. You're just kind of plopped in the middle of this story and you have these characters.
There isn't really a plot.
Well, exactly. I mean,
there's
it's a survival
them existing.
Tale. Yeah.
And so yeah.
But what they're surviving is each other.
Yes. But just like them, the audience is on uneven ground. You have no
exactly.
idea.
Exactly. Yep. You're
there's
right.
No stability.
Yep. You are absolutely so, right.
I don't know. I appreciated it. I like movies like this, although I could have done with a little less of the crazy scary, but and you know, with 100% less fish vagina.
No, I think the crazy scary was important, and I think the visions were also important to kind of tell you that Robert Pattinson's character is losing his mind.
If he had one.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're never sure if I'm not even sure if either of them was sane going into it.
Well, I don't know, because I like the fact that they're like you start out knowing nothing about like with no knowledge of Robert Pattinson, so you have no real assumptions, but you start out with a bunch of assumptions about Willem Dafoe, about like crusty old sailor. We find out that he got hurt, so he can't really sail anymore. So now he works at the lighthouse, but he still treasures all those memories and has reverence and fondness for the sea, blah, blah, blah. But during the course of things, we find out that Robert Pattinson's character is a little more complex, and Willem Dafoe's character is just a little sadder. Like, he's just a broken down old man at the end of the day. And yet,
well, and he's left his family behind.
Yeah. Yeah, they're both alone in the world.
Yeah.
By choice.
Yes.
And circumstance. And two people alone in the world wishing they didn't have each other.
It's like the anti-love story.
Yeah, like we're stuck on a desert island with somebody you hate.
Yeah.
Except it's not a desert. It's rocky, the stormy coast, but still.
Rainforest island. Yeah. Really.
So are we off to housekeeping?
Sure.
I don't know how much we want to talk about Nacelle on the pod itself until I figure out what I'm going to do with this thing. But thank you guys for being way too generous. Drew had sent me a message about, hey, what do you want for your birthday? And I'm like, I don't know, whatever, you know, and was like, that's not very helpful. I'm like, you know, just give me something fun or whatever. He goes, I'm going to buy you a VCR. I'm like, okay, well, maybe not. Tell you what, I want to build a robot. Right. And I didn't even know what that meant. I mean, like, does that mean I want to, like, a little kit, like a Lego kit or something to build a robot or whatever? But you guys outdone yourself.
And well, the credit all goes to Brother Drew. Okay. I was just, he was the brains of the operation.
Well, I salute his brains and your guys' generosity, because I've now got this kit that is a whole bunch of, most of it, it's very interesting because most of it is kind of put together already and kind of modular, except that it all plugs into this Raspberry Pi motherboard that you have to program, which should be easy, theoretically. But there's some steps involved in that part of it. And then you attach the other things, and then you can make, depending on what you want to do. But this is the extravagant version of this thing. You know, I had kind of, I think I had skimmed past these sort of things before, where you get like the Raspberry Pi, or you get a kit that doesn't have the actual Pi chip in it. And instead it's just got a whole bunch of pieces, because one of the reasons I found out how generous you really were is that I had to go on Amazon to figure out what all these pieces were, because the inside of the box does not really give you a map about what the pieces are. I mean, they're kind of self-explanatory, but you have to go online and look at a whole bunch of documents to even figure out like what you're supposed to do with these things. So I will let you know about my progress, but I'm going to build a robot.
Good.
It's going to be able to take video and pictures and pick shit up. So that's my goal. I want to annoy the cat and dog and lift stuff by remote control.
Okay.
It's everything I wanted. It's great. It's perfect. You couldn't have picked a better set. So,
well, I didn't though.
No, still. Okay. Well, I'll again, praise on Drew as well.
I want to give all due credit to our youngest brother. This was his brainchild, and I'm happy for it because I was stumped.
Well, knowing my obsessions, his first thing was, oh, I'm eager to see how you turn this into something. I'm like, oh yeah. The first thing I did was like look online to see, okay, go to the website for this company and see, like, download the gigantic PDF zip files and stuff of all these steps you have to take, starting with like programming your chip using your own computer and then installing it and then making sure that you can control the servos and stuff, and then figure out, okay, now what are servos? Anyway, and like you can get these little different camera things. And of course there's a camera that comes with it, but you know, if you look online, you can see a different camera too. And there's all these, you know, because it's this whole community of Raspberry Pi people are all about people making like their own computer stuff. Like you can do anything with it. Like there was, so then I got into, again, obsessions. I got into this whole thing about, making a magic mirror where you can buy a two-way mirror and then you get yourself like a LED screen, like a display or LCD, sorry, display that you put the magic mirror in front of, and that you can project Google, like calendar stuff, weather stuff or whatever, kind of on your mirror that you can put up in your bathroom or your house or wherever you want, so that it's a mirror you look at, but kind of like the Peloton things you're selling now, where it looks like a mirror, but then it's not only it's Peloton, it's somebody else, where you're working out looking in the mirror, but then there's also a video portion that comes up in front of you and it's all hidden when it's turned off. And that's one project.
You look at yourself in the mirror when you're working out?
I don't have a mirror big enough.
That would dissuade me from being, I couldn't do that.
Yeah. But you know, there are some gym people that, you know, like when they do biceps, they kiss their own bicep, you know, as they're doing curls or whatever. So, you know, again, that's,
I must have gone to the gun show.
Exactly. Yeah. any criticism of those people is just out of jealousy, because like I said, I would need several mirrors and it would just be, it'd be horrible. What I want is a magic mirror that just shows me from the neck up, because nobody cares about what I look like from the neck down. Certainly not me. but there's all these other projects. Like, what I really want to do is I have this haunted doll and I want to actually like set it up. So one, like one of those Halloween, decoration things where there's a motion sensor. And so when you walk past this doll, its eyes open and its head turns and maybe some screams come out of it. This is all doable, programmable using a little tiny computer and, you know, some servos and sensors and stuff. Mm-hmm. All of which are available for...
You're going to put somebody in therapy is what you're going to do.
Or I'm gonna burn the house down. One of the two. We'll see.
All right.
Yeah, mean, or what it'll really amount to was would be I will spend like 125 extra dollars on parts and material to make something I could buy at Fred Meyer for $15.95. But still, we'll see if I can make it myself. Now, if I can combine stained glass and jewelry stamping with computing or robotics or whatever. I don't know. We'll see.
That's always the rub, you know, when I want to go bake something or make something really big in the kitchen, going and getting all the stuff and assembling it costs more than if I just were to go and buy the thing.
Oh, almost absolutely. Always. Yeah.
So I get the satisfaction if I make it myself, and it's probably made with slightly better ingredients, healthier, but God, it's just like, oh, it just pains me.
Yeah. So. That's why, like, I want to go to a steakhouse, because I could technically, and I with the sous vide now, I could actually technically like buy a nice steak and cook it at home and it will probably be fine. But it's not going to save me a lot of money. And it will, of course, it will require a lot of time and mess and stuff. So unless the doing of the thing gives you joy, yeah, it's just better to buy the thing.
And oftentimes for me, that's cooking does bring me joy. So.
Oh, no, me too.
But then there are times I'm like, why am I doing this? I could have just bought, I could be gaming right now. I could be doing a thousand other things.
Yeah, but if I could spend, okay, so I just introduced Journey to Skyrim. I think I told you that. And yeah. But what it has meant, though, and it's on the Switch, right? Which I have a Switch that I bought for myself in order to share with her, too. And then it sort of became her Switch because she really got into, like, Mario Kart. But she doesn't really use it very much. Drew has found out that his girls don't use the Switch as much, really. But I love playing Skyrim on the Switch because playing Skyrim on the bigger screen gives me motion sickness, but on the smaller screen does not. But what this means now is I will go home from work and want to just fall in bed, like immediately, like walk to the door, go to the bathroom, maybe get something small to eat, kiss my wife, kiss my child, cross my legs at the ankle and just fall into bed and just wake up the next morning, like just from that. But instead, what I'll do is to wind down is I will spend an hour and a half walking around Skyrim and picking lavender and, looking at sunsets and stuff. And occasionally you get to fight a dragon and stuff. But a lot of it is walking around and just looking at stuff and playing in water and whatever. Now, if I use that time, like, if I could take this little robot thing and make a little doll's head turn and or eyes flip open on, like, at my command, that will give me joy. However, if I can almost do that, it will drive me crazy. So, you know, we'll see.
Oh, well.
Like, if I spend hours and the head turns a quarter of the way I want it to, nothing will make me angry. Which, by the way, comes to the story I was going to tell you about me flipping my chicken.
Okay.
So, Journey had this project where she had to make a, taking, like, a recycled stuff and turning it into art, right? Art or something. So, she basically, her project that she chose herself was kind of a redo of a project she did, I think, in second grade, where she took a bunch of stuff and made like a musical instrument out of it.
Okay.
So some bottles, and then some bottles that were glass bottles, some bottles that were like a plastic bottle, but you put like rice in it. And then, you know, we found like this wind chime thing that had this little mini ornament that had little chimes on it. So that was kind of cool. And the bottom of like an Easter basket, this plastic that makes a nice drum sound. And she used some of those stainless steel straws, like reusable straws for like drumsticks. So you know, but she needed some help cutting the holes in the big cardboard box to put these things in. Because she's not real comfortable with like using sharp blades and stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'll do that part of it for you. So she's marking the holes and whatever. And I am, we don't have glass bottles anymore. Like I used to have glass iced tea bottles, but those are all plastic now. So, and we don't drink beer. So we don't really have like beer bottles, but I saw at Walmart, they had like this, is it extra strong ginger beer? And I thought, okay. Oh, I'll try this, right? And zero calories. So I was like, yeah, cool. Turns out, not great, but it gave me four basically beer bottles. So that would be good for her project, right? Yes, buying stuff to recycle, sure, but still. So I come home and I drink two of the four pack and wash them out and get them dried out. And the next day we're marking circles or whatever. And while she's doing that, I grab a third of the four from the fridge and pop that open. And I'm drinking that too, because again, gotta get rid of it no matter what, right? So I'm cutting holes, right? One big hole for the drum thing. A slightly smaller hole for this other glass jar, and then two of the ginger beer bottle holes. And so I get all that cut and everything, and I'm trying to like size it. So I put the bottles in there, and what do I do? But I grab the bottle that I'm drinking out of that still has like a third of a bottle of ginger beer in it. And I just pour it into her cardboard box. And immediately I'm like, mother. And I'm like yelling and swearing serious swear words. And like, what happened? I'm like, I just dumped a whole soda into this thing. And then Kelly says, why? And I lost it. I'm like, why is not the question. Like, because I'm a dumbass, okay? Are you happy? Why? Oh, and I'm running to pour the ginger ale stuff into the sink and dry out the thing, whatever, so I don't ruin the whole project. But I was just the question, well, why did you do that? I was like, oh my God, I just lost my mind. What do you mean, why? There is no why. This is not a good question. Anyway. That's all. I'm not the hero. And then, of course, they both laughed at me, which is what you should do. It's like I have turned into my father. You know, I get it. Like, I am always on the other side of it. I'm always laughing at people who are unreasonably angry. It's something of a personality characteristic of me. However, it sucks when the shoe is on the other foot.
Certainly does.
Yep. So it's like, yeah, yuck it up, people.
So we've since it's springtime, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
There are Anchorage series. Hornets and wasps abound.
Woohoo!
And so the real estate agent, sorry, the neighbor warned us when we moved in that the old man's car that lived here before, he had parked on the street and it had sat there for so long that it had become a giant beehive. So they had warned us that if we park a vehicle in the same spot, we probably want to keep an eye on it and be vigilant about moving it repeatedly. And, you know, because bees go back to the same spot if they think there's a nest or hive, in theory. So, mind you, I'm allergic to bees. I carry an EpiPen because I'm paranoid about... I just... Last time I got stung wasn't pleasant. And so So that's the rule around the house. Like, if there's a bee, I'm like, you got to take care of it. Jesse's like, this is your job, because if I get stung, it's going to be unpleasant for everybody, including, you know, having to go to the hospital probably. So,
yeah.
And so the other day, I think it was, maybe it was Sunday, I'm in the backyard and I'm looking in the eaves and I can see old remnants of nests that have been destroyed and knocked down. So, and that's pretty common. You know, you see when it's being built and you knock them down. Yeah. You just have to do that at the old house repeatedly. And then I'm with the dog. That's the only reason I'm going to be in the backyard, is because the dog needs out. And I'm back there and I see wasp fly up to the shed, and the shed has a roof, proper roof on it. But rather than being kind of an open style roof around the eaves, it's just like plywood that's flat.
Mm-hmm.
Except I noticed one of the planks of plywood has pulled away. And so there's a gap in the plywood.
It's a beauty. Like, bees make like hives, like, that are nice and round. Wasps just fucking live in your walls.
So I see one fly in there and I don't see it come out. And then I see another one fly in there and I immediately went in the house. I'm like, uh-oh, this is not good. So I texted Jesse and I said, took a picture and I said, I'm going to Fred's. I'm going to go buy some bee killer. This will be what you're doing when you get home. So just prepare now. And so I get the bee killer. I come home. I'm waiting. I'm avoiding the backyard. He comes home. He like goes out there and it's still nice outside. It's still daylight when he gets home now on Sundays. And there's like three wasps or whatever they are hanging out right at the crest of the underside of the roof. Not at where this hole is, but close to it. And Jesse has this, you know, this spray can that will shoot up to 30 feet, it says, right?
Yeah.
And he's going to spray it up. And I'm like, you need some goggles. You should not be just spraying this crap without goggles, because you're going to end up with it in your face. And you're have to run it.
I've got a piece of advice that I sense I am too late in giving you, but go ahead.
So he said, I don't need goggles. I've used this before. And I'm like, okay. I'm just going to point out that there have been many times in the last couple of years where I have pointed something out and you've said it wasn't necessary. And then after the fact, you say, quote, I should have listened because you were right. And I know that it's irritating a lot of the time for me to be naggy, but I'm only naggy from experience.
Yeah, see, that's the only benefit of age is you know what not to do because you've already done that dumb shit.
So I just said, okay, I'm going in the house. So if I hear screaming, I'll come out. But otherwise, I'm going to stay behind the closed door. So do what you need to. So he like eyeballs it. He's like, well, I'm just gonna stand back and spray these three and we'll see. And I'm like, whatever. I'm going in the house. So so he sprayed them and then he sprayed the hole. And I don't know if there's any in there, but they didn't seem to, none of them came rushing out to kill us. So
that's good.
I'm assuming the problem is solved. So
and this probably says this on the can of bug spray, do this in the morning, not in the afternoon.
Well, it was night.
It's cold outside and they're a lot less active. So in the morning time, it's your friend. In the evening time, they are all excited and ready to go.
Oh, I'll keep that in mind. I will relay that information because it's sunny in the morning. So,
but it's cold. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's in the 40s. So,
yeah. Yeah. Get them in the 40s. Do not get them in the 60s or 70s.
I will relay that. So, but so he's going to have to take care of the shed roof. And I'm like, look, you get like, I can't, I would do it if I could, but I don't think either of us wants that. So yeah. I'd rather not get stung.
No, you don't.
But in the meantime, across the street, the dog park, they're doing maintenance on the dog park. They're like reseeding the grass and doing some weed abatement and putting in some gravel and stuff. So, and it's a substantially large park. So they put notes up on the gate entries that say, you know, the park's closed from April 13th to the 30th. And the gates are basically like sallyways. So there's this staging area so that dogs can't get in and out.
There's two doors. You only open one at a time.
Right. And neither of those doors face the street, I think probably on purpose, because you don't want a dog running out directly into the street if it gets out.
Right? Yeah. Seems reasonable.
So the signs are on the door. The park is closed and they put padlocks on the doors. Except that a lot of the people that take their dogs to the dog park, first of all, don't live around here. I didn't say that. They don't live right on the street. So they don't see the signs. They never walk by them.
Yeah.
But from the road, you can't see the signs. So it's been this interesting social experiment, because I work from home 3 days a week now, to see people drive up, come to the street, turn around, because they have to turn around because they're in the street, park, get their dogs out, walk up to the gate, try and open the gate. It's locked. There's a lock on it. You can see the big lock on it. Then they look at the sign, and then it's that you know, depressed walk back to the car with this super excited dog now.
Oh, yes.
That doesn't understand. So people are, I've heard a couple of people that are pretty cranky because, you know, like, I drove all the way here and didn't know it was closed. So it's been interesting. I'm waiting to see the locks shot off one of these mornings. So that would be about right for this neighborhood. So that's been amusing. It's been really nice weather though. So hopefully they can take care of that. I kept hearing these weird noises in my office from outside and I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I realized it's cows mooing.
Nice.
And they moo anytime, day or night. There's no reason. They don't need, it's like, oh, it's light out and they're mooing. No, they just moo. So that's an experience. We've had the windows open a lot because it's been warm. So that's been a thing. But and then my only final thing tonight is just to pour one out for Shock G.
Yeah. So tell me about Shock G.
Sorry,
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. But like, other than the Humpty Dance, would the guy with the prosthetic nose as part of his shtick?
He did a bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Turns out he's very influential. First of all, the Humpty Dance is super influential in its own. It's been sampled like a ton of times. But also, yeah, he had lots of personalities, guises, or whatever.
Well, and so
he was Shock G. He was Humpty Hump. He was three or four others at least. He actually did music and produced music and like played instruments and stuff on other people's albums as all these different names.
Yeah. I mean, he was associated with Tupac. He was associated with Eazy-E, Dr. Dre, George Clinton, Prince.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he had a lot of talent that I think people didn't connect the dots, because how would you, right?
Yeah, unless you're in that, you wouldn't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I didn't know until after the fact. But I like Digital Underground. The album Sex Packets is amazing. I was listening to it probably a month and a half ago, and Jesse was asking, because he heard it. He said, "What is this?" Because I've heard some of this before, and I'm like, I just don't worry. Don't worry about it. But it's a great album, but it's one of those albums too that individual tracks are great. But if you listen to it from start to finish, there is a theme.
Oh, okay.
And so it's entertaining. It's very entertaining. It's so filthy.
Everybody right now, to honor the dead, everybody buy sex packets.
Excellent.
It's probably doable. I think he should get a spike. A spike in sales, if nothing else. So
yeah. So I recommend it if you're a fan of that genre of music, though. I mean, you have to be, you know, it's kind of rappy, hip-hoppy. I didn't know what he was working on, but that album is still one of my favorites. So
sweet. Anything else? I think I'm done.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything else. What's next?
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother's Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Okay.